Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Irish Times Women's Podcast. I'm Cathy Sheridan. Now, you may remember a couple of weeks ago we published an episode all about endometriosis and what it means to live with a chronic condition. Aideen Finnegan hosted that episode and she spoke with Johanna Huber and Derval Ormond about their personal experiences living with endo. And if you haven't listened to that conversation yet, it's definitely one to go back to because it's something we're hearing more and more about now. And we haven't got to grips with it in this country. This week on the podcast, we're following on from that discussion and talking about the process of egg freezing and the rising numbers of Irish women who are choosing to do so. According to the Health Products Regulatory Authority, 9,681 eggs were frozen in Ireland by women in 2022. This compares to 1,773 frozen in 2018. That's another 8,000 over, 6 years? Irish singer Pastiche is one of those women who has frozen her eggs, a decision she made after she was diagnosed with endometriosis last year. And she was told she might have a hard time getting pregnant the longer she left it. She's only 26 years old. And she's written about her health journey in a song called Forfeit Control, which we recommend to you. Pastiche joins me in today's episode, along with Edwina Oakes, who is the chairperson of the Irish Fertility Counsellors Association. Edwina has worked as a counsellor for over 10 years and provides specialist fertility counselling to couples and individuals from her private practice. Her specialist interest includes all aspects of assisted conception, donation treatment, and supporting clients before, during, and after their treatment. Today, we'll be hearing all about Pastiche's journey, what the process of egg freezing involves, and what you need to know before considering it. Here they are, Pastiche and Edwina. Pastiche, you're 26 now.
Yeah.
And you have been suffering from endometriosis since you're about 12.
Yeah.
And that is very relevant to the subject we're discussing today. So tell me about how that started and how it's going.
So for me, it was, I mean, ever since I started my periods, really, it's been kind of a crazy battle. So since about the age of 12, you know, I started getting my periods and they were just awful, to be honest. Like, there's no other way to say it than awful. But I think when you're first experiencing your cycles and stuff, you're kind of told, oh, they'll level out, you'll be fine, you know. And I remember I was in secondary school, I was in my first year in secondary school, and there was one time I had to take 2 weeks off of school because I was bleeding so much and in so much pain. I almost ended up in the hospital with the pain. And then I remember going to the doctor and they're like, oh, just go on the pill. It'll help. That'll sort that right out. And of course, like, you know, I was young. I was like, yeah, okay, grand. That's fine. And then anytime I kind of brought up to my doctor, like, oh, I've been on this pill for about 5 years now. Maybe I should probably, you know, take a break. And they're like, oh, sure, why would you do that? Like, you had horrible periods, you know, and my periods were still bad on the pill, but they were more manageable. And it was only then when I turned 22, I was like, you know what? I kind of just want to get this all out of my system. I want to just take a break. I want to see what my body's natural cycle is like. And I ended up in A&E twice with cramps for my period. And that was even on the pill. And I was like, you know what? Let me just see how I'm looking without these kind of hormones. And that's when it really started to nosedive for me. And I got cystic acne. My hair started falling out. intense weight gain that I could not shift, fatigue and pain. And the periods got worse. They got more irregular. And then I started getting pain not on my periods, which was the craziest thing. And then, you know, I'd gone to the doctor multiple times and obviously told, oh, you have IBS, you're fine. Oh, it's just wind, you're fine. They made me do a lot of STD tests because they were like, oh, could we, you have chlamydia. And I was like, okay. It was just a lot of just to and fro. And I remember bringing up endometriosis after I had I finally got an internal ultrasound and they found that my left ovary was immobile. And I was like, this is amazing. Okay, great. We have somewhere to kind of start now. Let's investigate this. And they were just like to me, oh, well, we couldn't see endometriosis on the scan. So just go back on the pill. And I was just like, you're joking. I've been going through all of this and you're making me just go back. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And yeah, it got so bad that I had to just go private. And I was very lucky that I had had a gynecologist before when I was in a lot of pain. They thought I had like a burst ovarian cyst or something. I now know it was probably an endometriosis flare. So I got onto that consultant, had an in-person meeting, and I was so fed up with how I'd been treated by doctors and dismissed that I went in with a 14-page document on my laptop with period cycles for the past 12 months, symptom logs, photos. I even had videos of me and my pain attacks just so I knew that he couldn't tell me there was nothing wrong with me. And then within a month, I had surgery and I was diagnosed with stage 4 endometriosis. So it's been a long run for me.
And that's only a few years ago, Pastiche. That's
I was 3 years ago, maybe. I was only diagnosed in November. And this has been going on since I was 12 or 13.
This is an incredible story. And of course, we've heard it before.
But can I just say, yes, it's not a story that is, it's not a few and far between story. Mm. It is a story that happens to so many women. And the minute I even started talking about it, the amount of women who have the exact same experience as me is so shocking for something that is as common as diabetes.
I see Edwina nodding vigorously there, and we'll get on to you in a second, Edwina. But just tell us, Pastiche, what happened next? So you got you were delighted, you had a diagnosis at last.
I was so delighted, yeah? Which is crazy to say. I literally cried tears of joy when I found out, which is such a crazy experience. But yeah, it was all over my, I was everywhere. So it was stage 4. So it was all over my ovaries, fallopian tubes, womb, bowel, bladder, any organ in that pelvic region, it was on it. And so I was kind of like, great, in the surgery, they just kind of excise it and then I can move on with my life. And I was then to learn, no, that's not really how this goes. It is a chronic condition that is not curable. And because it was on my ovaries and my womb, they couldn't remove all of it because that, you know, you don't want to risk losing an ovary or doing anything to the womb or whatever. But I remember my gynecologist was like, right, well, we'll have to start talking about egg freezing. And I was like, hold on a second, egg freezing? What? Like, what? No, I just got my diagnosis. I'm going to be fine. And he was like, No. And I had my follow-up meeting and he was like, look, when are you thinking of having kids? And I was like, I feel like a teenager. Why are you bringing this up? Like, that's not anywhere in my, you know, near future, even far future, to be honest.
Yeah, you're a young musician and you're getting going and you intend to tour and do all kinds of...
Specifically after COVID, all of our lives paused, you know, and we've lost a lot of time. And he was just like, if you don't plan on having a kid in the next year, we need to really strongly consider freezing your eggs because you run a real risk of not being able to have children with the stage of your disease. But while also telling me, look, he can't play God. There's many women who have stage 4 endometriosis who have kids and that works for them. But in terms of just having that insurance plan and just knowing that this might not be the easiest road for me, I suppose. And so, you know, that's what I did. I said, well, okay. So I went from like in the space of like 4 months, getting a diagnosis, getting a surgery, freezing my eggs. It's been a lot.
That was a lot. And that's only in the lot. That's only this year, basically, if you were diagnosed in November.
I froze my eggs last month.
And were you made aware of the statistical evidence that we have so far of how effective egg freezing is, pastiche?
No, not at all. I mean, I genuinely was quite naive, I think, when I went into the process. I think going into it, I was like, oh, grand, just freeze the eggs, throw them in the freezer, grand, you know. And I was hearing about, I like to do a lot of my own research, mainly because of kind of the medical gaslighting I have experienced. I do take to the internet and I try to find as much information as possible on things. And I was kind of like, oh, people are doing a round and getting 30 eggs. God, that's like 30 kids. That'd be amazing. Soon found out that is not how this works. And I think going into it, you know, even when I got my first scan and I had, I think it was like 26 follicles or something, I was like, oh my God, that's amazing.
26 babies, you thought?
Yeah, I was like, that's great. And then each scan, you know, by the second scan, that halved. And I was like, wait, hold on, what's going on here? And I don't think you really prepare yourself for the numbers game of egg freezing and this the statistics of, I think it was like, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's like for like a 75 to 80% chance of a live birth, you need like 20 eggs in the freezer or it's some kind of margin like that. And that was big news for me and really put a lot of this into perspective, I suppose.
So you went for the egg retrieval procedure, pastiche, mm-hmm. and what was that like?
Well, the whole experience, in fairness, I thought it was going to be really rough. I had a very good, pleasant, I suppose, time with the injections. And it's like a 2-week process of injecting yourself daily with hormones. And I thought that would be horrible, but I kind of got off lucky. It was only on the last couple of days that I could not move and I was in a lot of pain. But the thing that shocked me most about the egg retrieval was I was awake during it. Which I think, again, just calls into question a number of things just about women's healthcare and how we're treated in terms of like our pain and our pain management. And I mean, that shocked me a little. I know there are some places that you can go and they do put you to sleep. But it was almost triggering kind of having to do that awake. It's a lot that you have a massive needle that you see because you're awake and you go in and they put it in inside you and they pierce the vaginal wall and they pierce your ovary and, for lack of a better term, suck the eggs out, I suppose. And it kind of reminded me a lot of, like, you know, when you get your coil fitted, if you've ever had a coil or anything, and they always say, oh, it'll just be a pinch, it'll be grand. And then that was also a big shock for me. Like, I was screaming, crying. I almost puked afterwards. And they were just like, oh, you did really well because most women pass out. And it's like, if we're going through these processes that are this painful, give us pain management, please. Give us, you know, if I just, it irks me because I feel like if it was a man in this situation, it would be a lot different.
So what would you say to women about to go through that procedure? Would you say, I want sedation and I want proper sedation? Or would you say it's all over in a few minutes? Or what would you say?
I mean, look, everyone's different, I suppose. And I think specifically with me, I've had such a journey with pain in general. Mm. Like, I've been in so much pain my whole life and I couldn't get doctors to give me strong painkillers because they were like, well, you'll get addicted and you don't really need this and it's just IBS. Only since my diagnosis have I been given proper pain management for my endometriosis. So I think going into it, I already had a high pain tolerance, being honest. But I think it's really important to have that talk with your doctors and the people who are performing the surgery. But to be honest, there are a lot of clinics who just flat out don't offer that. Like, it's not an option. And then there's also the cost of it too. Specifically when you're going privately and stuff, that's a whole other ballgame because then you need the anesthesiologist in. And so I can understand why women just kind of listen to the doctor and say, oh, well, every other woman gets it done awake. So, you know, it should be fine. But it is. It's a tough procedure.
Did you have insurance? Did you have health insurance?
I'm very lucky. But the insurance, would you believe, only covers up to €1,000 off one round of egg freezing.
Right.
That's it. So, unfortunately, I had a good round, I retrieved 9 eggs in the freezer, but I will need to do another round. And so my options in terms of insurance and stuff are gone now. So it's fully self-funded. And even with the insurance, I mean, it was still, I think, like $2,500. And then the insurance gave 1,000 towards that. But that's it now for like my lifetime.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you got peace of mind now? Do you feel that's that done now and you've allowed for all of that in the future?
No. Mm. I think with coming to terms with living with endometriosis and how that can affect my life in the long run in terms of my fertility and then also opening up. I see egg freezing as like this can of worms because it's only we really, it's weird. We're taught our whole lives as women, don't get pregnant. That is the worst possible thing that can happen to you. And then automatically it's like, well, you want to get pregnant. You want to have kids. You want to do this. You want to do that. And then going into, I didn't even know if I wanted kids, but I think it's like when it's put, the thing is put in front of you of that option might be taken away from you. That's when you're like, I want that option. And so going into it, it's like, I thought I would feel better afterwards. But then when you only retrieve 9 eggs, you're like, well, that's not enough. And then even if I had 20 eggs, will I ever feel like that's enough?
Yeah.
You know?
Edwina, you really have been nodding vigorously throughout all that. Just tell us, before we address Pastatia's story, tell us a bit about yourself and the work you do with the Irish Fertility Counsellors Association.
Well, we're an organisation that was set up around 2007, so we've been around for a while, and we support individuals or couples that are going through everything relating to fertility. So everything from when somebody is like Pastatia situation, if they're encountering endometriosis or other associated problems, that we're the specialists to talk to go through those emotions, talk through the procedures, what you might encounter, to basically, I suppose, help them understand what's involved and what's in front of them as well as having the opportunity to talk through the decisions people have to make. Now, we don't give advice. That's the one thing I must really point out. We don't do that. We're a really good sounding board with the experience for them to discuss their feelings, because it's lovely to talk to family and friends, but they might not have a real in-depth knowledge of what's involved. Mm. And so that's why the specialist fertility side is so important.
Can I just ask Pastatia briefly there, did you get counselling, Pastatia, before you went ahead with this?
No. And that's something I really, for me, I think with my situation, it has all felt very rushed in the sense of I kind of had a window of time to try and do this before my endo grows back or gets worse or affects my organs more. So, you know, it was a very thing, once you recover from your surgery, let's just get this ball rolling straight away. And to be honest, I actually really wish I did seek some type of counselling or someone to talk to. Because again, like, I'm 26. Most people I know are not going through this. I think I knew one person, kind of like an internet friend, who experienced this. And I think you don't really think about, even if you have a really supportive family and friend group, you do not think about how isolating it feels to be in the situation that, you know, obviously people can try and support you, but they will never truly understand it until they're in that situation.
So Edwina, I think part of Pastatia's uniqueness, and she's unique in every way, obviously, but she's only 26. That isn't the usual profile of women you see, is it?
No, I tend to see women usually from about 30, early 30s and up, because I think the average age at the moment in Ireland for getting married, and I'm not suggesting that you have to be married to have a child or anything, but it seems to be that seems to be the kind of age bracket that people start thinking about fertility. So they get married at 31, on average 32 and upwards is the time they start thinking about, you know, creating a family. And it's really difficult because, you know, you might be trying actively to have a baby, and you go visit your doctor for 6 months, 12 months, and, you know, they're saying to you, look, keep trying. This is what you need to do. This is what's involved. Because like Pastatia said, you know, we spent our 20s trying to avoid it at all costs. We were told this was a bad idea. So, you know, to be actually told, right, you're not trying hard enough, or this is what you need to do, it becomes quite difficult. So by the time they actually cross the threshold into a fertility clinic, they've already been actively trying for an amount of time. So it's a very daunting situation to be faced with that, because people have, you know, ate organic, run their 5 kilometers, they've done everything they're supposed to do, and their body is letting them down. And it's not something you can see on the outside, because you're, you know, the most perfect specimen of human nature on the outside, but on the inside, something else is happening. And you don't, like in pastiche's situation, you do have symptoms, but in other situations, you don't have symptoms about egg quality. We don't have that. But also, I think a lot of people, what I'm seeing in my private practice now is a huge spike in the increase in people that, ladies that are considering egg freezing for now because of COVID. So they might have been 32, 33 at the start of COVID. They're coming out the other side of COVID and going, you know, I haven't met a partner. I'm not really sure what the future landscape is for me on this score. So I want an insurance policy. I do want to have that genetic connection to my child. I do want to go ahead. And they are actively freezing their eggs, which I think is a positive thing. I think a lot of it is around education as well, that we are starting to talk about it on the mainstream conversation. And I think that's really, really helpful for people.
So the egg freezing thing is quite separate and to a lot of people will be a very new idea, Edwina. Yeah. That's when women have decided they're not ready for a child, but they want the insurance. So when they come to you, do they come into you fairly confidently and say, look, it's just the firm is paying for it, or you know, I just want to be very sure and I have a few bob put aside for this. Generally, how are you approached about this? Why are women coming to you?
A lot of women are sometimes they come to counselling because they've never considered it before. They're not sure what to do. How would it look like if they're actually going to create a family on their own? Mm. And what that might be for them, because there's a lot of women that are deciding that now. So they're saying, yes, I'll go and I'll freeze my eggs now. But if I don't meet somebody, I might have to look at the possibility of using my eggs and a donor sperm and actually creating family on my own. That's what the future might look, and what's that going to be like for me? And talking about, you know, how difficult it is actually to meet somebody now. Mm. That's the other side of it. It's actually quite tough for people to meet people anymore. So that's the main reason I'm seeing a lot of people.
And I gather from something I'm reading here that the average age is 38. Is that what you're seeing?
For egg freezing?
Yes.
I'm seeing a little bit younger than that, 36, 37. You know, I'm seeing a little bit younger than that. A lot of clinics would look at 38 as being sort of just on the cusp.
Right.
Because obviously what people don't realize is that your eggs age with you. So when you freeze your eggs, you're freezing your egg at the age you are now. So if you're freezing your eggs at 26, they're probably, you know, much better than freezing your eggs in your mid-30s. So technically, the better, you know, the earlier you freeze them, the better it is.
Okay. And what does it involve, Edwina, now? At some point, the woman says, well, I'm going to go for this. What do you say to them then? Do you describe the procedure to them, or you don't advise them, obviously, as you say, but what do you say?
Yeah. Well, when they're considering, they'll make a decision about what clinic they're going to go to. And when they go there, what's involved? So initially, it will be a scan and some blood work will be done. And then you'll meet a consultant who'll probably discuss the protocol that's right for you. So that will involve some medication to take. And once you start your medication, you probably have some very short visits to the clinic just to check how things are and how you're responding to that medication.
So the medication is hormonal, Edwina, is it?
That's yes.
Yes. It's to stimulate the follicles.
Yes. And once to produce, you know, the eggs and in the ovaries. And once they decide on a retrieval date, your eggs will be collected. And it is a very short procedure. There is sedation involved. Unfortunately, it was an awful experience that Pastiche had involved being awake for during that process. But in many occasions, people tend to not even know it's been done. They tend to fall asleep. And as such, after that, your eggs are immediately frozen.
And do you ever find out, do the women stay with you, Edwina? Do you know what happens next usually, or is that the end of it for you?
No, sometimes they do, because, you know, sometimes they're considering, well, what's next? And they're talking about life and there's almost a relief. Well, I've done this for myself now. This is a really positive thing to do. I've, you know, insured my my fertility for the future, I now know that in 5 years' time, if I wish to use those eggs, I'm in a good position. But the other thing to remind people of is if you save 9 eggs or 10 eggs, we'll say for the ease of maths, not all 10 eggs are going to be viable. So statistically, as I understand it to be, about 20% of those eggs will not be viable. And then, you know, so that leaves you out of 10, let's say that leaves you with 8. And I know it only takes one, but obviously the more eggs that you've collected, the better your chances.
Because I'm surprised that Pastiche produced 9, which sounds pretty healthy to me. But how many ideally would be retrieved?
Well, in one cycle, 9 is quite good. Some people have a little bit more. And in some cases, they would go for 2 cycles or 2 egg collections. So you'd have around 20 eggs if possible. So that would be optimum. That would be great if that could be.
And Edwina, can you give me, what do the statistics say about this? I mean, obviously, it's not as successful as, say, if you're using fresh eggs, so to speak. But in terms of how many successful pregnancies result from frozen eggs, what are we talking about?
I wouldn't know the exact statistics. I wouldn't have those available to me because each clinic would be different.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have those statistics, unfortunately. But it is quite successful. Although I will say freezing an embryo obviously is more successful than freezing an egg. And that's something to consider down the road for people as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
One of the reasons we're talking here today, Edwina, is a report that the number of women going for this process has soared over the past few years. Are you putting that down to COVID and women having had a good long think and looking at being forced to look into the future, missing those vital early years? Is that what you think it is?
I think it's a lot of education, awareness, and I think COVID has played a big part in it. And I'm delighted to see there's more awareness really out there that we're actually talking about fertility, because fertility has been such a hidden struggle for so many people. And it's not a one size fits all. Fertility is unique to every person, every individual and every couple. And that's something to really understand. And the tsunami of emotions that you go through during the process, even the most straightforward of processes, can be quite intense. And that's something to really recognize. And I'm delighted to see it's being recognized in workplaces now. It's being recognized in the media a lot stronger than it used to be. So that is really positive. And yes, I think COVID played a huge part in a lot of single ladies coming out of the other side of COVID, because it really took over, you know, significant amount of years. And even one lady I spoke to recently said, you know, I'm 36. She said, if I go out and meet somebody this weekend, if I'm lucky to meet somebody this weekend, you know, going to be a year or so before we might be in a position to consider making a family. And I'm really going to be very lucky if, you know, at 40 or around that we're able to conceive naturally. We'll be very, very lucky. So she sees it as an insurance policy in advance of that. So she's taken the pressure off, really.
Yeah.
But there is no guarantee. That's the one thing, you can never have a guarantee about this.
Now, we know, Edwina, that some companies have been helping their employees with this and have been paying for female staff to freeze eggs alongside perks such as gym membership and that sort of thing. Now, some of us sense that could be problematic in the sense that it's almost encouraging women to put off the day so they can stay in competition with their peers in the workplace. That is that a little bit too confident, or what do you think of that?
that's a complex area, very much so. And I know it's very difficult for small to medium businesses, if we're being really realistic, to support people going through fertility treatment. We have to be really aware of that. I think larger companies, maybe even multinationals, are able to absorb that a little bit more to provide that support. And I know we've got a new bill that's slightly delayed. What is it? The legislation, the Organization of Working Time Reproduction Health Related Bill that we've got coming out. Well, hopefully it's being considered, which will allow, if somebody has a miscarriage up to 28 weeks gestation, that they'll have 20 days annual leave. And also that there will be an allowance of 10 days for people that are going through fertility treatment, which is a positive. It is a positive support to give to people. Yes, some companies do pay for fertility support. And there is a lot of healthcare. I know, I think Leia and VHI, I'm not sure of the other healthcare providers, they may also provide support, but I think it's down really to the policy that you have with your employer as to whether or not you have that cover. Yeah. So that's something for each individual to check out. And my understanding is it's about 3,500 in roughly in that area to go through a cycle of egg collection. And with your healthcare provider, you would hope to receive somewhere between 1,000 or 1,200 back. But again, that's dependent on your own policy and what's available to you. So that is an individual thing.
Does that include the cost of the storage, Edwina?
No, storage is extra. And storage, as I understand it to be, it's about €300 a year.
Right.
It also, I think when you go to these things and you see it all on paper, for me, for the experience I had, I won't name the clinic, but like, I had a very positive experience, but you go in and you think, okay, $2,500, that's fine. But that, there's actually a lot of hidden extras that you don't actually think about. You have to get a full blood workup that you have to pay for separately. You have to do a AMH test, which is they check for the anti-Müllerian hormone. You have to do an AFC test, where it's like a transvaginal ultrasound where they check for your follicles. That's all extras that you have to do before you even start the process. And then on top of that, then you have your fees. So like, you know, even if you go and you say, oh, okay, $2,500, that's not the full picture. And then of course the medications as well. Luckily they do fall under the DPS, but
which is a maximum per month payment,
which is €80, I think. But if you don't have a DPS, you're looking in the thousands, I believe, for the medication alone.
How much do you think it's cost you so far, Pastiche?
Oof. Oh, I don't even know. I mean, let me think. Probably around the $3,000 mark. Mm. Just considering the cost of the actual egg freezing, then all the extra tests that go on top of that, and then also, I mean, having to take time off work as well. So, I mean, you're paying all this money and then you have to take time off too. I mean, it's not by any means a cheap process.
Just before I go back to Edwina, tell me, you don't have to tell me the name of the clinic you went to if you don't want to, but how did you choose the clinic? Because I think we're all very aware of the bombardment of advertising and influencers indeed on Instagram, etc. and TikTok in regard to egg freezing. Did you feel that pressure, or how did you pick the clinic that you went to in the end?
So funny enough, I shopped around a little bit with my clinics, and some were a lot more expensive. And I kind of wanted to understand why some places were a lot more expensive than other places when we're kind of just doing the same thing here. Like, you know, there surely has to be a standard of care, baseline care that everyone gets, you know, that you're not like, one thing as well that I will add into this is that it is not, it's not a definite science. Mm-hmm. As we were saying, like, it's, you can pay all the money in the world. They cannot tell you you're going to get X amount of eggs. You know what I mean? It's a totally person by person situation. So I was kind of like, well, why am I paying like $4,500 to go to this place when this place is like $2,500? And for me, it was honestly talking with my gynecologist, about, like, look, I'm looking at these different places. I'm kind of confused. I kind of got a bit of a couple of red flags for other places that were very just like money, money, money.
Yes.
It seemed they were kind of money first rather than care first. So that was a big kind of red flag to me. I also kind of put it out on my Instagram, and I had a lot of people talking to me saying, oh, I had a bad experience here, but I know this place is good, or I know this person had a good experience here. And then I just went to my gynecologist and I was like, look, I'm between these clinics. What do you think? And do you know what he said to me? He goes, go to the cheaper one.
Did you?
And I was like, why? And he goes, because he knows the person who was running the cheap one, but that's actually not the one he referred me to. He referred me to a much more expensive one. And I said I didn't really like the vibes that I got there. And he said to me, look, it's all the same. And with the cheaper one, it was kind of like they don't offer these egg gluing and all these extra tests. They work on, we go by the testing that we know works and the kind of, not bare minimum, but like the standard tests that it takes. Mm. And yeah, they go off the science. Because I think the thing as well with these clinics is as well, I'm not doing this to get pregnant right now.
Yes.
But a lot of people are going into these clinics either looking for egg freezing, panicking about egg freezing, or looking for IVF. Mm. And the issue with that is a lot of these people who go to these clinics are very stressed. They will do anything to have a baby. And I think that can kind of create a culture of money grabbing in a sense. Mm. You know what I mean? And I think when you're in a position like that, you're very vulnerable to thinking, if I throw money at this problem, it will work out. Yeah. And that, yeah, it's just, that's not the case with egg freezing and fertility.
Which is where Edwina comes back in. Edwina, have you noticed this money, money, money culture around egg freezing?
I have to say, I think that with the fertility clinics, and again, I'm not tied with any of them. I have the utmost of respect for them all because, you know, they have an amazing amount. They've got the scientific experience, which is what we're looking for. And absolutely, prices will vary. And it is up to the person themselves going to that clinic, which one you get a good vibe from, a good feeling from. That is really your decision to make, whether it's the cheapest or the most expensive or somewhere in the middle. It really is down to your own individual experience and how you get on with the consultant that you meet. And I think that's very important. I think also to point out, sometimes when we go to a clinic, we feel that there is going to be that emotional support piece. Mm. And I think I want to just, I was supposed to set that level of expectation. While I believe that everybody does try to do that, there might not be the time to give to individuals or clients or individuals or couples when they visit a clinic, because they are, you know, very structured. And that's where the counselling comes in. That's where we come in. We provide that emotional support piece. And it's a tricky thing because sometimes people come away, they might have been to a clinic and they said, you know, very good, very well regarded, and, you know, would like to go with them, but just felt it was very rushed or just felt it was very clinical and didn't get a feeling from that. And I just want to remind people, you know, set your level of expectation. You are looking at the scientific experience and expertise of the clinic. That's what you're buying. And that's where your expectation should be, if that makes sense.
Is it a well-regulated area, Edwina?
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. I think certainly here in Ireland, we have an awful lot of, we're well regulated and it is well monitored. Yeah, absolutely. I would like to think so, very much so.
What do you think, Pastiche? Do you think from what you've heard, because obviously you're hearing all sides of this now coming at you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, Edwina's coming from a much more educated background to this than I am. But again, for me, I'm here more on like, talking with people, and again, just from my own personal experience, you know, I mean, 4 months ago, I had no clue about this whole situation. I knew nothing about this 4 months ago, you know. For no moment of time did I ever feel like anything was unregulated. I felt like anyone who I talked to, I felt like, although yes, quite clinical, the standard is high. Mm. And I think again, you know, when looking at different clinics and stuff, again, it is going to go on preference. It is going to go on your budget. there's a lot of things to consider. But yeah, I think, I mean, I would have faith in the institutions. And maybe that's just because coming from not a medical background or having much experience in this, I would just hope that's the case, I suppose. Like, again, I don't even know if there is a regulatory board for this in Ireland, or who is even checking that these places are doing the correct things and the right
things.
Fair
question, but
I think, yeah, I to be honest, I haven't got a clue. I am going into this blind and hoping that that is the case.
And Edwina, because there is a sense now of this moving on to the high street, and people sort of will balk a little bit at that, that you're going to the same place for Botox as you're going for your egg freezing. People will be a little bit shy maybe of that. But as far as you're concerned, are they all regulated equally? Is the standard high in all of these places? Is there a board?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe it is very high. And I don't think it, from my knowledge anyway, that egg freezing is going to become something that can be done on the high street. I think there will always be regulations. I think it will be a very specialised area to look after people, because it is, you know, it's health. It needs to be monitored. It needs to be looked after. It needs to be always the highest level of care needs to be given to everybody. So definitely, I don't think it's going to be mainstream, sort of like Botox or something like that. I think it's going to be a lot more in depth, and hopefully will remain that way.
Yes, indeed. And Edwina, what age? Now, women listening to this, well, you know, Pastiche is 26 and has very particular circumstances. At what age should women begin to look at this seriously? Egg freezing.
I think the younger that you are is the best, really. Just my own professional experience from speaking to clients. I certainly think that when we're around 36 or 37, I think, you know, it's probably going to, you know, a bit late. So I would say really anywhere from your 20s up, because don't forget, like I was saying earlier, the eggs are frozen at the age you are then.
Yes.
At the date.
Yes.
That date. The minute they are frozen, the day they're collected and frozen, that is the age they remain. So when you're taking and when you're collecting an egg that's 35, the age of that egg is 35. So again, when you're aware that your egg, your ovarian reserve is at X and the quality of your eggs are at X, you know, when you hit 30, there's a huge decline. They literally fall off the shelf. And we're not really taught that at school. And if we were, you know, we probably weren't really thinking about it, you know, understandably so. And I hear and speak to so many people going, gosh, you know, if I knew then what I know now, this would be very, very different, because we can't turn the clock back.
No.
That's the problem.
Pastiche, last word to you. You've actually written a song about this.
Well, indirectly, yes. But can I say one more thing before we talk about that really quickly? I think exactly what Edwina said is like so spot on. I am telling any of my friends, I'm very vocal about this. I'm very passionate about endometriosis and egg freezing and female fertility after just dealing with this kind of whirlwind. But one thing I will say to women is like, go get an AMH test. Even if it's something you've never thought about before, it's a blood test. Get it done. Just do it. Pay. I think if you go privately, you know, it's probably like, I know it's like £100 or something, or I think you might be able to get it done publicly through your GP. I'm not fully sure, but get it done and just know where your fertility is at. Because again, like I said, we're taught all of our lives not to get pregnant. And it's only then when you want to get pregnant, you start thinking about those things, when really you should be considering all of these factors when you're in your 20s. So go get an AMH test, see where you're at, even go for an AFC test. You know, I know internal ultrasounds sound horrific, but they're not. The amount of people who have seen my vagina now is insane. I'm so used to it at this point, and it's really not that bad. And knowledge is power. And that is what I will say to the young people. Just, yeah, take your fertility into your own hands. But yes, I my song was more about kind of mourning the loss of my youth from this experience of being kind of like, well, I'm meant to be in my 20s. I'm meant to be going out and having fun and, you know, making horrible choices. And I found myself in a situation where I was dealing with a chronic illness that then led me to be freezing my eggs. And it, that is a very big jump to go when you're meant to be kind of carefree in your 20s. This is the decade to make mistakes and go wild and go crazy, and then to kind of have to rein it in and deal with that. So the song is kind of just about like escapism and kind of coming to terms with the loss of your youth in a sense, and being okay with the universe happening to you. Because again, I didn't expect any of this to happen to me. You know what I mean? And a lot of people who go through these things, they don't expect it. And the thing with endometriosis is as well, your stage doesn't define your symptoms. You can have no symptoms and be stage four. You can have all symptoms and be stage one. So this can affect anyone at any time. So allowing the universe to just kind of happen to you and go along with it. And that's why it's so important for me to talk about this, because it's like, right, well, if this is going to happen to me and it's really annoying and it's not fun most of the time, I'm going to try and make something good out of it and scream it from the top of my lungs.
And the song is called Forfeit Control, which is brilliant, and I will be listening to it. I presume it's on Spotify, is it?
It is
okay,
on Spotify.
I'll be finding it. Edwina, thank you so much for joining us today. And Prestige, thank you for your passion and advocacy. It's very much appreciated, and I think your messages will absolutely be so important to a lot of women who are listening to this. So thank you both so much for coming on the Women's Podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a million.
That's it for today. Thanks again to our guests, Pastiche and Edwina Oakes. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review or subscribe, as it really makes a difference to us. I'm Cathy Sheridan, and this podcast was produced by Suzanne Brennan and Roisin Ingle, with JJ Vernon on sound. You can reach us on social at IT Women's Podcast, or email us on thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com. That's it. Mind yourselves, and I will talk to you next time.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.